The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
It's Donal Kavanagh on the 9 till noon show this morning, standing in for Greg. This is my last shot at this particular rodeo. Greg's back as usual on Monday next. Just want to again remind you before we go any further that the first of our Highland Radio Mega Summer Cash draws takes place on the show this morning at 11:30 as we speak. I'm looking at Sean and Kevin getting everything ready. The tombola is being filled with the tickets and everything is being put in place in studio. That draw being done live at 11:30 during our entertainment slot this morning. Now, you can still buy a ticket. You have got 1 hour to buy a ticket that will be valid for today's draw. We're closing those lines at around about 11 o'clock. So you can call us at 074-912-5000. Speak to Katie. Get your ticket sorted out. You can still be in the draw. Remember, if you win the draw today, your ticket goes back in for next week. If you win next week, it goes back in for the week after, back in for the week after. We have four draws, four successive Fridays, where there is €2,500 on offer. And on the fifth Friday, which I think is the 1st of September, there'll be a €10,000 cash prize. So you can, if you, you can win one of the weekly prizes, and then your ticket goes back in the draw. So if you win one, your ticket goes back in. And there is a total of €20,000 up for offer on the Highland Radio Mega Summer Cash Draw. You can also buy a ticket by going onto highlandradio.com and clicking the draw link. But at this point, if you want to make sure you're in the draw at this stage for today, my inclination would be use the phone. And of course, obviously, then the lines reopen and the tickets are on sale then for the coming draws as well. Now, a few comments before we go to a break. Caller says, I was a Sinn Féin member but can no longer support the party as it promotes a policy to introduce legislation which would allow children under 16 change their gender and take parents to court should they object. The party also supports the idea that children should be given puberty blockers on the request of the child. The party has lost its way. Caller says, I know this may sound crazy, but why doesn't the government put solar panels and, if feasible, wind turbines for each school in the country? That would reduce energy bills for schools and long-term save money. Perhaps go as far as to do likewise with all government properties. I mean, in fairness, I think a lot of work is being done to promote sustainability and promote alternative energy in all sorts of areas. If you look at, for instance, the Public Service Centre in Letterkenny, you can see there's panels going up there. There's various environmental initiatives taking place. So such things are being done. Now, obviously, what you've got to do is you've got to balance off the initial cost of the investment, because such investments can be very, very expensive indeed. So you've got various balancing acts you've got to do. But certainly it is happening, and may we see a lot more of it into the future. Caller asks, how can people give voluntary money to the schools when the government have the people crippled with everything that's going on in the country? The people are struggling to live, never mind give whatever money they have. This is the mentality of the people that run this country. Suppose the bottom line is, when you have a child in education, you're going to move heaven and earth to ensure your child gets the best possible education they can. And if you believe that making a voluntary contribution to the school is going to improve your child's education, then you're going to do it. That's the bottom line, I suspect. There is a simple answer to all this. We were discussing earlier on about the need for a new political party and so on. And we discussed the whole issue of maybe Sinn Féin going into government, and could we see Sinn Féin as a finance minister? And, you know, if he is, if Piers Doherty, for instance, were to become finance minister, is he then going to have a chat with a civil servant and find that there's a lot more to running the country and running the finances than just making promises and fulfilling them? Well, caller says, why not invite Piers Doherty onto the show? Let him explain to the people how Sinn Féin are going to turn the country around. Let him speak in a language that every living person understands, and not just in the political way that they speak. And I suppose the answer to that is Piers Doherty is regularly on Highland Radio, outlining his policies, outlining his priorities, outlining his beliefs. And his challenge will be, if ever he gets into government, the challenge he is going to be facing if he is made finance minister, which is eminently possible in the not too distant future. If that is the case, then the challenge he faces is to make good on those promises. A lot of talk today and yesterday indeed on the issue of voting and young people in general. And Cotter says, young people are the ones you need to get interested in voting. I know from talking to a lot of them that they have zero interest in politics. Many have never voted in an election. Technology is the way to get young people interested rather than posters, as they spend so much time online now. And we spoke yesterday to Pauline O'Reilly, Senator O'Reilly from the Green Party. She's the party chair. And she did acknowledge that, you know, more needs to be done online to cater for the TikTok generation, if we can call it that. If politicians want to vote, our caller says they're going to have to get online with TikToks and Snaps, whatever. Yeah. And I will be honest, I'm kind of, you know, I know what Snaps are because I have a daughter and I have a son. Many, if I didn't, I wouldn't have a clue what Snaps were. I think Facebook is now considered an older people's forum. I'm not sure about Instagram as I find it hard to use. I'll be honest, I have Instagram on my phone. I'm not sure I've ever used it. I don't have Snapchat on my phone. I do have TikTok. I think I may have used it once, but I've either forgotten my login details or I haven't signed up properly because I can't log into it. Caller says posters are a thing of the past. Now, for a lot of people, they are. But I think for a lot of people, they're still not. And there are a lot of people will make voting decisions based on the posters. And, you know, polls have sort of borne that out. So there will always, I suspect, be a place for posters and parties will always want to put them up. The lady from Leitrim said women... Now, this is a reference to our contributor yesterday. She's a Labour representative from Leitrim, Bridget... Bernie Canan, sorry, I had forgotten her name briefly. Bernie Canan from Leitrim, she's a Labour representative there. She said women can achieve anything a man can do. That's a repeat comment. Caller says, I took someone to an appointment this morning and I'm sitting here just people watching. In the last 20 minutes, I watched 12 people come out of their appointment with their phone in their hand and drive off, continuing to hold their phone to their ear. Why is there no enforcement of the phone laws in this country? A caller sent in an interesting picture from a recent festival, a menu that was on display outside a premises, and the first item on offer is a full English breakfast. And this was a festival that took place in Donegal. Now, I don't know technically, is there a difference between a full English and a full Irish? I know certainly there is a difference with the Ulster fry, because if you have an Ulster fry without a fried slice and a soda farl, then it's not going to be regarded as an Ulster fry. Is there a difference between a full English and a full Irish? Now, if there is, I'm not aware of it. It's an interesting question. I would have certainly called it a full Irish, and I'm sure my cousins who live in the UK would call it a full English. We were speaking about cocaine. Caller says, I was at a wedding recently and cocaine was being offered around the same way as people are offered drink. Now, yesterday, one of the callers we had made a point that basically they said, I don't feel any sympathy for people who take drugs. Now, we had spoken to White Oaks, to Stephen there in White Oaks, because they're looking for night supervisors to assist in the White Oaks Centre in Inishowen. Now, and a caller said, look, I don't have any sympathy. People take drugs. They know what they're getting into. They know what the risks are and they must live with the consequences. Now, another caller says, look, I totally disagree with that. I believe peer pressure plays a big part in this. Many people with a slight weakness in their personality can be taken over and manipulated into using drugs. And then before they know it, they're hooked. It's okay to have this attitude until it hits your own door. And by the time parents know it's an issue, it's too late. They have children in addiction centres drying out, and that's only if they're lucky. You have debt collectors at your door and you have families torn apart. And it was an interesting comment that Councillor Martin Harney made there during the Friday panel when he said a Garda said to him some years ago that if your child comes in after a night out with a smell of drink off him, count yourself lucky, because at least then you know there's some level of control. And that is a very interesting point. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on a Friday morning. Don't forget the entertainment slot coming up just after 11 o'clock this morning. Doing that draw, of course, during the entertainment slot as well. Lines still open for those tickets. A caller has a child with additional needs. There were 3 physiotherapists looking after children in the Donegal area. 2 have left and the 3rd is leaving in 2 weeks' time. The concern now is that there'll be no one to look after children with those additional and specific needs until they get a replacement. And this is always an issue where we have people, be it going on maternity leave, be it people going on holiday, be it people leaving to go to pastures new. And, you know, notice is given. It's known that they're going, but still suddenly we find ourselves in a situation where we don't have replacements and we don't have the service to offer. Now, we are going to move to another discussion, because earlier this week we spoke to Minister Roderick O'Gorman, and specifically we spoke to him in the context of the bringing in of a payment for people who have to be out of work for a few days because of domestic violence, and they will be given full pay for a period with no questions asked. That's a law that's come into force this week. One of the questions that I asked the minister was, does this hold for men as well as women? And the minister stressed, absolutely, this law is non-specific. specific. Now, I'm joined on Zoom this morning by John Kilgariff. Now, John is a counsellor with the National Male Advice Line, MAL, for male victims of domestic violence. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. Good morning,
sir. John, I mean, this is part of a TUSLA-funded pilot initiative, and it's an important one because whereas obviously and rightly a lot of focus is on the experience of women in the context of domestic violence, it is also an issue for men, and one of the jobs of the Male Advice Line is to perhaps meet the very specific requirements and sensitivities that that brings up.
That's right, and I suppose I would start by saying that, you know, as an organisation, we would, of course, recognise that the impact of domestic violence upon women and children is far more severe. But in saying that, it is very important that men receive support also.
And it's not a zero-sum game, because very often in these discussions, someone sort of says, oh, why are you talking about men? Women are, you know, and it becomes, it's either or, and it's not either or. The reality is this is a situation that people can find themselves in, and if more women than men find themselves in that situation, so be it. But I mean, you know, it can affect both equally, and by supporting one section, you're not automatically not supporting the other, and we need to get away from that sort of mentality.
That's very true, because, you know, in supporting, I suppose, with the Men's Development Network as well, one of our tagging is to be better lives for men, better lives for all, because in every case there is a partner and there's often children as well. So when, you know, an intervention is made or support is provided, that is a benefit for everybody.
Do you find in your work as a counsellor that there are specific issues that men experience as a result of domestic violence that, you know, make the situation, shall we say, more complicated?
Well, at times, I suppose, the impact, well, we would get a lot of calls around physical abuse. There are a lot of calls around psychological abuse or coercive control, which can have a very detrimental effect as well. And a lot of the times, it can be that may be minimised, when in fact, and coercive control is an offence, and it's a criminal offence. But a lot of the time, because again, traditionally as well, I suppose the role of men and gender has been that fearlessness, lack of vulnerability, you don't reach out, you don't talk about what's happened. That often can be, for the beginning, for a man to reach out, quite difficult.
And is it your experience that men will be perhaps later in the process to seek help than a woman might be?
Again, it varies. I wouldn't like to say for everybody, yeah. But in general, it can be. Or as I say to you, where maybe a man is in a situation where they often would come forward and speak and say, well, I didn't think there was anything wrong with what was going on here. That, you know, the finances were being controlled, it was being isolated, it was being monitored on the phone. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I thought that was normal. And it's getting to the point then of saying, well, this is having a big effect on me. This is having an impact. This is keeping me away from home, maybe doing the things that I'd like to be enjoying in life. And again, how that will affect mental and physical health going forward.
How important is peer support and maybe the perception of what peers' attitudes will be? There is a sense, and this is anecdotal, and I'm not aware if any studies ever been done on this, but certainly I would get a sense just from observation and speaking to people that if a woman sits down with a group of friends and says, I have a problem, she will immediately be supported, she'll be nurtured, she'll be given that maybe you need to seek help, maybe this, but she will immediately feel supported and she'll feel that she has, that her friends have her back. There may be a perception with men that if a man sits down and says something similar, it'll be, ah, you're henpecked. Ah, come on, man, stand up for yourself. That there's going to be a very, very different attitude from your peers if you try to discuss an issue for men versus if it's done by a woman.
Donal, it was just actually there's a conversation I was having just a few days ago with a man who did speak to his peers and had all those fears in place. And he was actually quite surprised by the reaction he got from his friends and his peers, his male friends in particular, that it wasn't the experience that he thought it might have been. And I suppose in encouraging that, that's what we do on the line here as well with the National Free Phone Line, is again for men to come forward in a non-judgmental fashion where they can just discuss what's going on. Maybe, again, they're thinking, well, nothing can be done here or anything like that. And it is, you know, we'd often have men in support over a longer term here, and it's surprising to be back to them and say, well, this is the position you're in now, this is how your life has changed, and that you're not experiencing that abuse on a daily basis.
How important is it that this project is being funded by TUSLA as a pilot, that there is recognition coming from TUSLA, there is recognition coming from government, that there is a specific issue here that does need to be addressed?
Well, it is very important. As I said, that again, everybody from all genders, from all backgrounds, from every culture is supported and doesn't need to experience intimidation, violence, abuse, any control behaviour like that. That is very important. And I suppose having the, you know, as an extension to the phone service, the pilot initiative, the client support workers in certain areas of the country, and we'd like to expand that, is a recognition of how serious this is being taken. And again, that the supports are out there for people that are just thinking, well, as I said, what can happen here? Who can I talk to? That there is something there.
One of the points that the Med Advice Line makes is that every man's journey is unique, and there is never going to be a one-size-fits-all response to an issue. And that's really, I suppose, got to be at the core of what you do. You've got to speak to each person as an individual and maybe explore what his specific needs are, and maybe what specific measures he needs to take, or what specific road he needs to go down.
And that's very important that we approach the work like that. And again, for anybody listening this morning that is thinking about making a call at a time when they're ready, that we will meet them as an individual, that their experience is unique, how they have coped is unique also, what the circumstances that are, and again, how we might find a way out of this for them, will be based on that listening, understanding, not judging, and believing somebody coming forward.
In terms of men who may wish to make contact, how can they do so?
We welcome them to call. Our national free phone number is 1-800-816-588. I know that is operational over 40 hours a week over 7 days. And again, with out of hours, they can leave a message also, we'll contact them. Also, through mensnetwork.ie would be our website. They're welcome to visit there as well, and can make contact by email or through the website also.
So 1-800-816-588 is the helpline, and right, mensnetwork.ie is the website, and people can get in touch there. John, this has been running since May 2019. What sort of figures have you been getting? And obviously, you can't be breaching in any confidences, but I mean, what sort of level of interest has there been in the service since it was offered, what's now just over 4 years ago?
Yeah, it's a service that is expanding, particularly through, I suppose, the pandemic and the change of when people spent a lot more time at home and were in those situations. We would have noticed a vast increase in calls. That has been sustained, and as I say, it's ever grown. And it is very important that that message gets out there, again, for men, and also for, again, concerned family members, mothers, sisters, and friends, and also professionals. And again, as I say, it's a nationwide service.
John Kilgariff, councillor with the Male Advice Line, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, John, for your time. Thank you very much.
It was our pleasure. That was John there. And we just repeat that again. It's 1-800-816-588. That is the number for the Male Advice Line. And mensnetwork.ie is the website. And you can get in touch via that site as well. Now, just look at some of the comments which have been coming in. Caller says, recognition must be given to domestic violence against men. Yes, but when one's influence is not effective... Right, I'm just looking at this comment. I'm going to put this to one side. I just want to have a read of that before I want to make sure I understand it. Another caller says, no men's groups were damaged or consulted during the government. Women's Aid initiative on domestic violence leave. 33% of domestic violence are men, yet 90% of government funding goes to Women's Aid and other feminist organisations that oppose parental alienation, one of the worst excesses of domestic and child abuse. Thankfully, the government do recognise it and are going to address it through family justice reform. That's a comment there that's coming from a caller. And yeah, the issue, of course, of control. And yes, it's an issue that has been highlighted, and that is an issue that's been raised before and no doubt will be raised again. Some other comments. You know, we were talking about parking in Ballybofey yesterday and how it can be difficult. Caller says there are car parks. Why do they have to park on the street anyway? Because sometimes car parks are not readily available. Sometimes car parks can be full, I suppose. It's the age-old problem that if you are going to stop, if there isn't a handy place for you to stop, you're likely to keep going. And what you want to do in an area where you have new businesses is trying to make it as easy as possible and as attractive as possible as such for people to stop and actually do business in an area. And the easier it is to do so, the more likely it is that people will stop. Caller says black comedy from AIB after being rescued during the crash when the government imposed a cap on management pay. The board of AIB insisted it was their fiduciary duty to break that cap to get the best possible chief executive. Some of it hadn't been their fiduciary duty to see that the bank didn't go bust for the second time within 20 years. So says a caller. Another caller says, coming up Mill Bray is a disaster area parked along the chemist and the shop. No one can get turned right down the Lifford Road. The yellow box isn't long enough, specifically at school time. That'll be, again, a reference to a discussion we were having yesterday on issues pertaining to business in Ballybofey and Stranorder. We spoke yesterday, as I said, to Pauline O'Reilly of the Green Party. And a caller says Green Party policies have little regard for the people living in rural Ireland. Perhaps they just see it as a place for wildlife to run. And as far as transport and infrastructure are concerned, don't even go there. Now, I suppose they're to the forefront in trying to promote the return of rail to places like Donegal. That's one thing, in fairness, that the Green Party is trying to do at the moment. Now, it is 27 minutes to 11 o'clock. Going to take a short break. Back after these. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Heritage Week gets underway tomorrow in Donegal and indeed across the country. It runs from tomorrow until tomorrow week, Saturday, August 20th. You can create your own personalised schedule of events by going to heritageweek.ie. Click on My Heritage Trail. You can celebrate the traditions, skills and practices that have passed down through generations in this wonderful country of ours. For more details, go to heritageweek.ie. Now, to celebrate, we have two vouchers to give away, which will allow you free access to some of Ireland's finest heritage sites. They have a face value of €90, but as we say, used expeditiously, those could be very handy indeed in terms of giving you an experience which is wonderful. We have three clues pertaining to a location in Donegal when it comes to heritage. This is probably one of the most famous heritage venues in this county. I am a castle inside a park. You can walk to me or take a bus. And I am beside a very large lake. And as I would say, number four, which is very important, you can do some really, really good walks and stop at a cafe in the middle for a cup of coffee and a sticky bun. So they are, that's my little extra clue because it's Friday and I'm feeling generous. It's a castle inside a park. You can walk there or you can take a bus. It's beside a very large lake and you can, as I say, do a nice walk. There's a 4K walk over and back to the castle. There is a 8K walk. There's a 12K walk. And in some of the walks, you can just stop in the middle and have a nice cup of tea and a pastry. So that is the clue for today. Now, I'm going to go to line one and to Midlands Northwest MEP, Colm Markey. Colm, a very good morning to you. Good morning. Colm, you have made a rather interesting suggestion, and that's a culture and media card should be gifted to people on their 18th birthday. And you'd like to see a measure to do this included in the budget for next year.
I'd like to see a 200 euro voucher, essentially, given to young people when they turn 18. I suppose in relation to the arts, to a voucher towards arts, music, theatre, literature, anything like that, that they could use it in any of those areas. Basically, it's to, if you like, to encourage an interest in the arts, and also, if you like, it may inspire them to discover their own creative talents, if you like, as well. Like, young people have come through a number of years. It's useful to recognise the efforts that they've made on one side, and equally on the other side, the one sector that suffered a lot over the arts and the culture sector. So, basically, if we could do this in, for art.
Yeah. Colm, I have to say, the line is not great at the moment. You're breaking up. We just persevere for a moment or two, but we may have to break the connection and call you back, because it's not a great line. Would you see this then as a voucher that can be cashed in, as it were, in various theatres? For instance, in Donegal, we have a number of theatres and artistic venues on Greenland and Letterkenny, the Ballar Arts Centre in Ballybuffet. We have the Abbey Arts Centre in Ballyshannon. We have centres in Buncrana, in Gwyddor. There are some wonderful centres, plus heritage centres as well, that we've been talking about in the context of Heritage Week. So there are a number of areas. It will take quite a lot of admin to get all those areas together so that you can be sure that the vouchers will be accepted and honoured in all those various places.
I think the idea would be to support Indigenous arts and culture, and I think the idea would be to put it through, if you like, that they'd be available through an app, and then all the different offerings could be available to promote on that app. Essentially, the app would promote the different activities, and if they were on the app, then you could avail of the voucher to you. I suppose the various theatres and people to ensure that their offering is on the app as well. But I think the key, like, enormous history issue in the art.
Colm, I'm afraid, again, we're losing you. What I'm going to do, Colm, is I'm going to suggest we break off this call at the moment. I'm just going to ask Caroline to try and ring you back, because it's a very interesting topic and I want to have the discussion. But at the moment, the call, sadly, is breaking down and we're just not getting proper coverage. So if you just bear with us, Colm, and hang up, we'll try and ring you back and get a better line. But stand by, and Caroline, we'll try and call you back. As I said, this is an interesting and, I believe, potentially very important issue. And, you know, I just want to make sure that we have good coverage on it. So Caroline is going to hopefully get Colm back for us. Just a few comments. A caller says, my daughter just tested positive for COVID after being quite sick for a few days. Because she tested positive and has symptoms, she has to isolate and not go to work until symptom-free. To claim sick benefits, you don't get paid for the first 5 days. She's just bought a new car and is making repayments, as she had to get insurance on payments. How is it fair that someone who has symptoms, tests positive and stays at home, does the right thing, doesn't get sick pay? Surely this is just going to encourage a spread of the virus. Another caller saying to us, if you need to make a medical appointment, you don't have a medical card, you have to pay €30 through a link on your phone. This is to get talking to a nurse who will then decide if you need an appointment or not. Is this HSC policy or is this a doctor's surgery policy? I would be grateful for any help with this query. I am not aware of that policy. Now, I know certainly if you call the NowDoc out of our service, you will initially talk to a nurse and you'll be triaged, and then arrangements will be made to see a doctor if necessary. Maybe that's, in terms of GP surgeries, I am not aware of such an issue. Now, I could be absolutely wrong on that. So if anyone has any better ideas on this than I have, and it's utterly possible that is the case, please do get in touch. We were speaking earlier about breakfast and what's the difference between a full Irish and a full English. Caller says, a full Irish has no beans, where the full English has. That's one possibility. Now, I've seen plenty of English breakfasts with beans as well. Now, I was wondering, would it be a matter of a white and black pudding, perhaps? Would you be more inclined to get a white and black pudding on a full Irish than you would be on a full English? Whereas with a full English, you might get beans and mushrooms. It's quite possible. Now, I don't know. I sometimes wonder, is it more a matter of just the names we're calling things than anything else? Could you please play a request, a caller says, for my nephew Dylan McCauley and Ashley MC. getting Ashley McCallig, excuse me, I think that's Ashley McCallig, getting married today in St. Columbus in Drumquigley's Point. Hope you both have a lovely day. Best wishes for the future. That's from Liam, Caroline, Demi, Lee, Danielle and Tegan. Now, let's see if we can get a better line with Midlands Northwest MEP Colm Markey. Colm, good morning again.
Good morning, Donal. I hope that's a bit better.
That sounds a lot better on first listening, which I'm glad to report. Colm, let's just briefly go back over what we were saying. You want to see a culture and media card gifted to young people on their 18th birthdays.
Essentially, that's what we're looking for. I think if you look at what young people have gone through in COVID over the last number of years, everyone is saying that we need to do something to recognise them. And I think in fairness to the arts and literature and culture in general, it's something that we have a massive tradition in Ireland. And I think we have to do something to engender that, if you like, in a new generation. And possibly by exposure to some of the arts offering that's out there, that they may look at their own creative talents and maybe take up some interest of their own. I suppose on the other side as well, you're looking at an industry that was equally affected by COVID. And there will be an enormous injection into their resources in terms of people attending events and a new generation of people engaging with the arts, essentially.
Presumably then that would mean some mechanism will have to be found whereby, and just looking at the situation in Donegal, we have on Grain and in Letterkenny, we have the Ballor in Ballybuffet, we have the Abbey Centre in Ballyshannon, we have theatres in West Donegal, the Arklan in Gwydor, we have other arts institutions right around Donegal that regularly host events. Presumably some arrangements would have to be made with all of those to ensure that this can be administered and the payments made promptly.
Well, the intention would that the voucher would be available on an app, and that app could also be used to promote a lot of Indigenous Irish arts and culture. And I suppose the idea would be if the offering was on the app, then you could use the voucher to access it. It also provides the opportunity then for all these different venues to promote their activities as well. But the focus would be very much on Indigenous arts and culture, yeah, and upcoming acts, if you like, as opposed to, let's say, international touring acts coming to Ireland.
Yeah, you were saying that you have attended the FLA in Mullingar recently, and seeing what was happening there was one of the things that informed this particular idea that you're putting forward. Could you see this being used perhaps to purchase instruments, to purchase dancing shoes, to maybe pay for dancing lessons, to pay for Irish language lessons? I mean, I suppose in a sense the potential scope of this is quite wide.
Well, the scope of it is quite wide, but at the same time I think we'd have to, if we can support the actual performing arts of sorts, I think that's where it would be. Certainly, like, it might inspire an investment, if you like, in let's say, instruments for that. But I think the bottom line is if we can, like, the industry that's there is struggling at the moment. We'd like to see a new generation engaging with the arts. And as I say, we've had such a history in Ireland with the arts that really we want to carry that for another generation. This has actually been tried in Germany already and has worked quite successfully for a number of years. So I don't see why it won't work equally successfully in Ireland. But I think the use of an app could streamline a lot of the admin in relation to it, if you like. The voucher would be available on the app and it'd be up then to the various theatres to advertise there. Let's say shows or whatever on the app to allow people access it from there.
You'd like to see this included in the budget for next year. We're going to be hearing that budget in October, and it's being discussed and obviously put together by ministers Michael McGrath and Patrick Donoghue at the moment. Now, in terms of the way that the app would work, when would you see this coming online? Obviously, it's going to take a lot of admin to get it together, to get all the theatres and other venues hooked into it. We're presumably talking probably at the very least 6 to 12 months down the line.
I would say you could do it relatively quick. Ultimately, it's about building an app and then allowing people to, let's say, theatres to put their offerings up on that app. So that side of it could be, it could be down to the theatre to take responsibility, or the performing act to take responsibility for ensuring that their concerts or whatever are on the app. From a budgetary perspective, I would estimate that there's about 65,000 people turn 18 each year. So ultimately, you'd be looking at a maximum cost of about 13 million. And I suppose in today's budget, when you see the surplus we have, this would ultimately be an investment in the art sector as well, as well as encouraging young people and giving them some support. But they, like, at its height, if everyone took it up in full, it'd probably be 13 million. But I'd imagine, like, some people with access to voucher may not use the full, do the full amount, or equally, some people may not be interested in taking it up. But the maximum would be 13 million, and it would be an investment in the art sector, as well as it would be an investment in the future for young people as well.
It's interesting that earlier this week we spoke to three young people in studio who are involved in curating a festival for young people aimed at 18 to 25 year olds, and that's taking place at 9 theatres across the country next year. And certainly there is a focus coming from government in getting young people involved in and interested in the arts, and this initiative, as you said, for an 18th birthday, this could dovetail quite successfully with that sort of initiative to try and get that love of arts. Because I suppose the argument is, if you inculcate a love of arts and if you inculcate a habit of going to theatre or going to performance or participating in the arts when someone is 18, they will continue to do so in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, etc.
Absolutely, and it's engendering that love of the arts and love of theatre and indeed music as well. And by so doing, number one, they'll attend, but equally they may take up an interest in it themselves and maybe get involved in the local drama group or the like going forward. And that has to be positive as well. Like, it can't be underestimated how important the arts have been to our country over the years in terms of, like, going right back. But even in recent times, like, our contemporary music is based on the traditional music, the likes of the FLA. Many of our modern musicians started in traditional music. And if you look at our writers over the generations, have always made a massive contribution. So we've had a very close association with art and creativity. And it's vital that we transfer that on for another generation. And what you say is true. If you sow a seed with an 18-year-old, that can live with them for their life. And it's not just what they get, the enjoyment they get out of it. It can broaden the perspectives on life in general. Because there's no doubt, if you attend a play that has a message in it, that gives you some, enlightens your life in some other way, that's beneficial in more than just the arts itself. So I think the idea of getting people engaging with the arts at that age, and the influence, the positive influence that can have on their lives in so many ways, and a lifelong interest can be developed as well. That's what you'd love to see come from this. And I think it would be a small investment if it achieved all that.
Have you had the opportunity to raise this with Pascal Donoghue or Michael McGrath and have conversations with your party colleagues and others in government to see what the appetite is like for this in Leinster House and perhaps more importantly in government buildings?
I have discussed it with a number of my colleagues now. We have actually sent it in directly to Pascal, but I haven't followed up on that just yet. But we intend to follow that up over the next week or two. I suppose I wanted to get the idea out there first and get a sense of how much interest there was in it. And we've had enormous reaction in the last 24 hours since we put it out there, through the likes of radio stations like yourself, but even the general public, who see this as a really positive thing, and they can see how it can have a positive impact on young people, but equally on the art sector, and just how it can, as you say, engender a lifelong interest. And I think that's something that we'd love to see happen out of it.
And what sort of response are you getting from the arts community, from the theatres, from the various venues, the art centres and so on?
I think they see it as one way that money can be invested in their sector, because what we just said earlier in relation to the impact that COVID has had on them has been devastating. Like, they essentially, theatres were closed down for a long period of time, and then people got out of the habit of going to the plays and let's say shows, and it's been, people have been slow to get back to their old habits, and something like this that gets people out and involved. And it's not to say that some young person won't go with maybe some of their family or some friends. It might be just their spend that you'll get out of this. You may get other people that will go along with them. People won't go to a performance on their own. So I think they need the support. They've had a tough couple of years over it, albeit those good supports from the government. But they really want to get the sector back up to full flight, if you like. And it probably hasn't really got there yet. And this could be something that would help it to do that.
Colm Markey, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Colm Markey there, Fine Gael MEP for Midlands North West. We're going to take a short break. Don't go away. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh standing in for Greg on the programme all this week. This is my last shot, and Greg is back as normal on Monday. Now, this seat many years ago before Greg and myself was occupied by, of course, Sean Doherty, who has recently been ordained to the priesthood, and Father Sean Doherty will celebrate the Vigil Mass of the Assumption in St. Eunan's Cathedral in Letterkenny on Monday next. That's the 14th of August at 7 o'clock. Sean will impart a first blessing to all present and refreshments will be provided. So I know there's been a lot of interest in this. I had the honour of going to Sean's first Mass in Derry and it was a lovely experience, having known Sean for as long as I have. And he will be saying a Mass in the Cathedral in Letterkenny, as I say, St. Eunan's Cathedral. It's on Monday the 14th. At 7 o'clock, and Sean will impart his first blessing to those who wish to receive it. After the Mass and refreshments will be provided, it's the Vigil Mass of the Assumption, and it's on Monday evening, the 14th of August. So if you're interested in that, that is something I'm sure a lot of people will be doing. Now, I want to go to Johnny McCollum, who's joining us on Line 1. And Johnny, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Don.
Johnny, you had a rather nasty experience on Wednesday of this week while walking in the main street area of Letterkenny.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You were almost knocked over by someone on an electric scooter. Tell us briefly what happened.
Yeah, it was about 4:45 just, and I was just coming there around McGee's Chemist, and just all of a sudden I got a bang on the side of my head, and I kind of heard a bit of a noise, like, and then there was, I was kind of, I think I was about to fall, like, and there were two men behind me, and I could feel their hands on my back, you know, but I didn't know them until I got steadied up a wee bit and I looked around. Only if that I would have went down. But this boy, I would say he's in his 20s, he come flying up from, we'll say, the XL shop, the top of Rosemount. He was flying out and in through people.
Yeah.
And when he got as far as me, he tried to sort of go around me, you know, and pass me. But he hit me with his shoulder, and he had a backpack on as well. And his shoulder and the backpack hit me in the head twice, kind of.
Yeah. And he was on an electric
scooter.
At
the side of the head, yeah. So I was, he cut me a bit because there was a man there and he cleaned me up a wee bit. And I went down to McGee's and that man went down to McGee's and he got an ice pack for me, you know.
Yeah.
To put on my head. But just as quick as a flash, he turned around and he says to me, "I'm in the right," he says, you know.
Well, that's questionable because earlier this week we spoke to Gráinne Doherty, actually Garda Gráinne Doherty, during the Community Garda slot. We know there's legislation going through at the moment which may legalise the use of electric scooters on the roads and put conditions in place whereby they can be used. But even after that legislation and now, Garda have confirmed to it is not legal to use those scooters on a footpath.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, because don't, sure, it's common sense, like.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have them. No Letterkenny every day in the week, you know, 7 days. The footpath, the town's very busy, like.
It is. And that's not the widest footpath by any means. That particular footpath isn't,
you know. He says, "I'm on the right," you know. So yeah. This man, he says to him, "Clear off," he says, you know. So the man asked me to go over then and sit down in the seat, like. And he come back over then and he wanted to apologise, you know. But to be honest, I didn't take him on because I was getting a bit better then, you know, I was getting angry then, like.
Yeah. But okay, in fairness to him, he did come to apologise. In fairness, he came over to apologise, which says something to his character. In fairness, but you are right. I mean, you know, and it can be no matter how skillfully someone can use. And sometimes you see people on these electric scooters, and their balance is great, and their skill is evident. But as you say, intrinsically on a footpath like that, particularly a very busy footpath in the centre of Letterkenny at 4:45 on a weekday afternoon, it is dangerous, irrespective of how skilled you are.
Yeah. Well, you see, after he hit me down, like, he lost the thing came off his feet, like.
Yeah.
And if somebody else had him been coming down, so that scooter could have went into them people as well, like. You know.
Yeah, well, look.
It's a very dangerous thing, though.
Yeah, it is.
No matter where you go, me and Callum was in the park the day before. up in the park here, which is a lovely park in Letterkenny. Mm-hmm. You don't have any peace up there because they're running around the park as well.
Now, I know you had had a major eye operation, Johnny, in Galway not all that long ago, and the knock wasn't all that far away from the eye. The most important question right now is, how are you, and is there any lasting effect from this incident?
No, well, I'm not too bad. I get a bit of a headache now and again, like, you know, but the man that day was standing there, and, you know, when I come to myself, I said to him, I says, you see me left eye there where I got the knock? I says, is that far above my eye? And he looked very close. Now, he says, it's about 2.5 inches above your eye.
Yeah.
Now, you can imagine, Don, if that had been, you know, had it hit me, how I would have been left, like.
Yeah. Well, you have reported it to Gardaí and made a statement.
Well, the guards contacted me.
Yeah.
And the two guards come to interview me and all, and they were very nice, you know.
Yeah.
And they said they'd probably have it on camera. No, that was Wednesday evening, the day's Friday, don't I never heard nothing.
Well, I mean, presumably there, and you know, we won't speak any more about that. We'll leave the Gardaí do their own thing, do their own investigation. I know you were somewhat concerned about, you know, how many Gardaí there are on the streets, and is there an argument here that given how busy the streets are, maybe do we need more Gardaí visibly present on the streets of Letterkenny and particularly on the footpaths?
Yeah, but you see, just telling you that, don't you see watching them? The cameras, they have to watch the cameras.
Yeah.
Could they not employ, you know, even young people in their 20s, like, because young people are very good at these things, could they not employ these young people to look at cameras, and instead of the guards down in the station looking at the cameras, they could be out and patrolling around the streets?